Today we're struggling with a slight crime spike in our homicides, which started actually in August and September. That made an impact, and we're still trying to catch up. This violence and this surge has taken place in West Baltimore. The Baltimore Police Department partnered with the State's Attorney's Office and ATF, Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, to conduct a strategic violence reduction initiative, which resulted in 24 individual criminals being arrested and taken off of our streets. 24 individual criminals that impacted the city of Baltimore will not do that any further. This focus was on a small geographic area within the Western District, specifically the Franklin Square and Penrose neighborhoods, which we have identified and targeted based on historical data. 35 undercover heroin buys and cocaine and crack, 35 undercover buys, which included heroin, cocaine, crack, and marijuana purchases, took place. Before I introduce Greg Bernstein, who will talk about the prosecutorial component, I want to thank all officers, federal agents, prosecutors for their dedication, their hard work in making our streets safer. Greg.
Thank you, Commissioner. As this strategic and successful initiative demonstrates yet again, there is an unprecedented level of cooperation among police, prosecutors, and our federal counterparts that's important for everyone to understand, including the violent offenders. Now, you all have heard me talk often about the need for cooperation and collaboration between our law enforcement partners and between our federal counterparts at the U.S. Attorney's Office. This is a clear message and example of what can happen when you have that level of cooperation. This has been a strategic investigation that's gone on for many months between the Baltimore Police Department, agents from the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, my office, particularly the Assistant State's Attorneys in our Major Investigations Unit, as well as our community prosecutors, which, as many of you know, is a model that we created about a year ago to focus more strategically on crime in particular areas. Our zone prosecutors, people like Robin Zakola and Jennifer Lehman, our MIU prosecutors, such as Stacy Pipkin and Tharu Viknaraja, who runs the MIU unit, have worked tirelessly on this investigation with the Baltimore Police Department, with the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, and with the United States Attorney's Office. And this is what we can see in the results when you have that level of cooperation. Our hope is that the arrests of these individuals, as the commissioner said, not only gets bad guys off the street and makes our city safer, but hopefully will lead through intelligence gathering to other cases and other unsolved crimes. And our hope is that we will be able to continue that investigation. I would like at this time to introduce the ASAC from the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, Sean Benedict, for a few words. Sean.
Thank you. I'm Sean Benedict. I'm the Assistant Special Agent in Charge with the ATF's Baltimore Field Division. This investigation was a collaborative effort between ATF, BPD, U.S. Attorney's Office, and the State's Attorney's Office. Protecting the citizens of Baltimore is our primary focus at ATF. Violent crime suppression is our number one priority. And through the collaborative efforts between ATF and the Baltimore Police Department, we're able to do that. And teamwork is our focus, and we're going to continue to do that in a collaborative effort. So, thank you.
Any questions? What are the charges these individuals are facing? I know there's a lot of them, but, I mean, is it all drug charges?
Certainly at this initial stage, that is what it's charged. It's distribution, possession with intent, things of that nature, mostly heroin. But, you know, as I indicated before, Justin, our hope is to use these arrests as kind of springboards to continue investigations into other matters as well, including violent crime.
This sort of leads to my next question, which is that, you know, first status is that they're not going to do any more bad things. But if the drug charges, aren't they likely to make bail and return to the streets? And even if convicted, the drug charges bring much lesser penalties than the violent crimes.
Well, what I would say in response to that question is two things. First, not all of them, I think, have been arrested yet. We're still out there. I don't know what the number is because it's kind of a static thing. It's the arrests are being made as we speak. And those who have been arrested are at various bail stages. Some are being held without bail. Some are being held with a relatively high bail, some with maybe not so high bail, depending on how you define high or low. But even those individuals who are where a bail has been set are subject to pretrial supervision. So, of course, they're at a different level of supervision than if they were simply out on the street.
Can you speak to how without bail is resolved? I mean, people usually do get released on bail with drug charges. Did you bring up anything else at their hearings?
I don't know that I would use your word sold, but I think that what happens in every case is that the commissioner, based on recommendations that we make in certain instances, considers two factors in all cases. First, is the individual a danger to the community? And that determination is based on both the nature of the offense as well as the individual's prior criminal record, if any, whether he or she is under already some form of supervision. These are all factors that the court will consider in determining whether the person is a danger. And second, is the defendant a risk of flight? And if the commissioner, based on recommendations that we make, feels that to be the case, that will be a determining factor whether to set bail or to have no bail. In these cases, what we did was we reviewed each one. Now, understand that we do not always make specific bail recommendations in every case. We did in these, and based on the factors that I described.
Bring up any of the violence to make that? I'm just wondering if they've been connected to the violence even though they haven't been charged with that.
Well, it would be inappropriate to present information to the commissioner for bail determinations if it's not based on findings and credible evidence. So I can't get into, because I just don't have the information in front of me, what we did in each individual case.
Maybe easier if I bring up Deputy Commissioner Skinner to talk about some of the specificity that took place. Chief Skinner.
So the neighborhood that we're talking about is just north of Baltimore and Gilmore, and we had seen from the beginning of the year a series of violence. I think within a very, very small geographic area, we had a murder and about 10 non-fatal shootings leading up until the summer months. And although these individuals haven't been charged directly with the violence down there, they're absolutely contributing to the violence within that neighborhood and are a driving force of violence within that neighborhood. And the only thing that I would really echo from the state's attorney's office is most of these guys are really, really bad guys. In fact, their records really reflect a long history of violence and kind of drug work within those neighborhoods. So extracting them from those neighborhoods really is going to bring some immediate stabilization to that community down there. And then it allows us to build some of these other investigations that are over on topic. And we also just want to publicly thank the task force officers, the VCID officers. You know, what they did out there was made a whole series of undercover buys, which is probably one of the most difficult things to do in police work. It's one of the riskiest types of operations, and it's just an extreme success of a great example of the police department working with federal partners and prosecutors to get the job done.
Is this a group that, like a name or anything like any just kind of structure or loosely affiliated?
There is some structure to it. It's definitely neighborhood-based, meaning that most of the organization was in the neighborhood, and there's inner kind of connecting parts with each one of these kind of individuals.
Were they all connected to each other, or are there some that may not have known each other, or is this just a massive suite?
How would you describe that, John? I would say that there's some level of connection with just about everybody within that group.
One question, dealing with your first question, when you're looking at the area, everybody said collectively, the area is extremely small. You're dealing with a small geographic area. Within that small geographic area, you had a multitude of organizations that were selling their product, whether it be cocaine, crack cocaine, or marijuana. So saying that they're one big group, we can't hold them to any specific group name. We can just tie them geographically to exactly where the areas of violence were. And because of their shop, I would say, causing the violence, that's the way they would be leaked. And you could have confrontations with in between, which is the end result of the 10 shootings and one murder.
Guys, we have a press release that has more details.
Your name? Your name?
Major John Hess, Violent Crime Impact Section.
Thank you, Major.
Thank you, guys.